On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 19th day of February 2015. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump into the chat room and join the ongoing, real-time, full multimedia experience that is the Horn Family Commune Congregation. It has been brutally cold overnight and today. I can't tell anymore. It's poor Bob's overmodding again. Thank you. Thank you, girl. I couldn't tell. I think maybe the headphone amp is going south on this thing. Kind of hard to tell. Better? Oh, that's interesting. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out loud and clear on TuneIn. Thank you. Jeremy says, as a side note, TuneIn did start to give me hell last night and would just randomly drop the White Rose stream. And then again, Android's new OS rolled out last night as well. So far, so good. Like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday here. Probably Thorn in the Side Thursday there, or depending on where you are relative to the international dateline, Thorn in the Side Friday, which doesn't make much sense. But just the same, we reserve Thorn in the Side Thursday for those moments that just make us, oh, you know, bumpuses. Right. I'm in love with that word lately because it just seems so appropriate. Yeah, it is. It is News Ninja Carol Baker. Frozen Thorn in the Side Thursday. And frozen solid, I might add. Let's see. It's a toasty 45 degrees here in the Horn Studio. I've got the gas heater cranked up and the electric space heater going. But some things it has a hard time keeping up with. I think we were up around 2 o'clock in the afternoon when we finally broke through to 3 degrees or so. What's the weather thingy say it is now? Oh, 3-1. Sorry, 1. And on the way to what? Yeah, on the way to a low of 9 or 10 below tonight. Then we get a break, apparently, around here. Tomorrow night's low is all the way up to 10. And then Saturday, inexplicably, a high of 37 and a low of 36. Sunday, we go back to hell again. High of 37, low of 12. Monday, 19, 0. And then Wednesday, 0. Thursday, 7. Friday, 9. And then a low next a week from Saturday of 21, so it tells me. It would seem that winter is exiting screaming. Yeah, I'm waiting. Oh, hell. Hillbilly World Problems, Gerald pointing out, we were going to build a fire tonight, Bob, but the damn stove froze and busted. Eesh. I believe, yeah. I mean, there are pipes bursting. It's like popcorn around here. To go to any local hardware establishment, whether it be big box or little local affair, to go to Wally World or any other, forget it. Kerosene, I actually played with the notion of getting a kerosene heater. Be no kerosene heaters. It tells you a lot but then, you know, there's an issue that sort of ties in with this. Did I say hi? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. There's an issue that ties in with this, unless the status has changed in the last 24 hours. The ongoing dock worker strike on the West Coast. Because I did venture, sickening as I find it to do so, I did venture into Wally World in search of a heater. No luck. Just like there's no Chilean grapes, there are no Chinese space heaters. Because again, I have absolutely no beef. I am fully in support of those dock workers. I don't care if they're striking because they want to earn the right to wear chewing gum on the ends of their noses while they're offloading containers from China. I support working people. Of course, I suspect the issues are actually much graver than that. But there's not a situation in which I don't support working people against the millionaires and the billionaires and Wall Street and what have you. Well. One moment. Anyway, so, it seems, on the one hand, it's obviously a labor issue. And it probably relates to some MBA, remember, some Harvard MBA. Remember, MBA stands for More Bigger Asshole. It probably relates to some Harvard MBA of some companies deciding that the people who handle all the freight that makes them filthy rich needs to earn less money or have a crummier retirement or lousier health care benefits. Right? Yeah. And so I support working people. But there is the larger issue. There is the larger issue of stuff. You know, there's a great little short video that's been around on the internet for a few years now called "The Story of Stuff," and it's an explanation of sort of. Why we're in this hand basket and why it seems to be getting so much warmer, figuratively speaking. But there was a time, and you know, it's far enough in the past now that it's a time that is dimly remembered to just about everybody. There was a time when, if you wanted a television set, and you went to the store to buy a television set, you knew that that television set had been made by someone, somewhere, in the United States of America. There was a time when the components, the various and sundry parts and belts and gizmos and whatnots and whoevers that went into an automobile were made in America, and most of the people driving cars were driving American cars. There was a time that if you wanted a refrigerator, it was not a chore to find out which one was American if you wanted to buy American. The same with a stove. Oh, that time, like I said, has just about receded into the mists of memory. And so it is that when there's a dock worker strike, because, of course, management is abusing working people, because money, because freedom, then suddenly shelves begin looking rather empty in our various retail establishments. And I don't want anybody, either domestically or internationally, to think that this is some sort of xenophobic rant. It isn't. But we pay a price, and this is a reminder of the price we pay. We pay a price by internationalizing and allowing stateless, borderless, multinational corporations to internationalize our access to goods. Because it doesn't have to be a dock worker strike. Any number of things can interrupt the flow of supplies across the Pacific Ocean. Global conflict? Yeah. It's like a friend of mine pointed out many years ago. When World War II came, we had to ramp up production, and we were in dire straits for a while, ramping up production for a global conflict that had already been burning up the world for a couple of years before we got in it. Late to the game. But we had a whole bunch of idled factories all over the country that were put back to work and reinstalled in the production chain to turn out war materials. I always think of Robert Shaw playing the Wehrmacht colonel in that terrible, god awful, really bad World War II movie, The Battle of the Bulge. You know, Henry Fonda, Robert Preston, Robert Shaw. When he sees a captured parcel from one of the soldiers that they had overrun and captured, one of the American soldiers, and he's talking to his aide de camp, and he says, "The Americans are sending chocolate cake across the Atlantic, Manfred. They have the fuel and the spare fuel and the time to send chocolate cake." And that's that moment when he realizes that they're done. They're going to lose. Germans are going to lose. Because a country that can afford to send chocolate cake across the Atlantic Ocean is not going to have problems sending tanks and airplanes. Because even the part of the Second World War that we weren't fighting in, we were supplying. Because, as Calvin Coolidge famously noted, the business of America is business. As I've said in the past, I think that should replace "In God We Trust" on the currency. We could distill it down a little further into a more of a almost haiku purity, and change. And the national motto of this country really should be "Anything for a buck." If we have to pay royalties to the people who came up with that in the scripting for the old Newhart show, because "Anything for a dollar" was Larry, Darrell, and Daryl's motto, wasn't it? We should, because it's apropos. This is all going somewhere. Well, my friend several years ago pointed out that if the same sort of conflict came to the United States, we'd be screwed. Because the factories that were idled during the Great Depression, that were brought back online for the Second World War, those factories are gone. They've been disassembled, nut by nut, bolt by bolt, taken apart and shipped to China. In part because we are externalizing labor costs and externalizing, to a certain extent, environmental damage onto another portion of the world. And most of America, did we come up with a new term last night, Dumerica? Most of Dumerica likes it that way. Oh, we wonder where our standard of living's gone. And we wonder why things don't seem to be quite as good as it used to be. But hell, we can go to Walmart and buy a little electric space heater for $39. Because there's some poor soul chained to a table putting together little tiny ceramic space heaters in China somewhere. And most of us don't think about that. Yeah, the gizmo line that runs here is a cell phone. And I do think about things like that. Now, I still participate in it because there's no way to get around it. That is the beauty of predatory capitalism. It is almost impossible to extract yourself from it. You know, you can adopt a buy American philosophy and, well, you know, I always think of Maglites, because I don't know where they are, somewhere out in California, right? But they're made in the United States, and they're well made, and I've got a Maglite that's probably 25 years old, and it's still going strong. No. Let's see, 15. Yeah, 25 years old. Ain't it funny how time slips away? But those are getting harder and harder to find. And so there's a future out there, and do you remember the 90s? You remember when Republican and Democrat alike agreed on the fact that globalism is going to be good for America? Remember that? And just a few hearty souls from places like the AFL-CIO said, like, it is. Remember NAFTA? Remember when the union leadership said, hey, you pass this thing, there's not going to be a textile mill left in this country. No, don't worry about it. We're going to make free trade, so that we're going to level the playing field all over the globe. And they did. But because of the operation of the law of unintended consequences, what we did is we took away jobs from American working people and gave them to people who had formerly been, say, campesinos in Mexico, and destroyed their way of living, polluted their environment, toxified their world. And oddly enough, you know what? A package of Fruit of the Looms, what? How much did the price drop? See? Oh, but the more bigger assholes and the Wall Street boys, ha, they made out like bandits. Didn't they? They squirtingly did. And so we're seeing it more and more. the North American Free Trade Agreement was followed by any number of others. And we're now looking at the TPP. And down the road, it's going to bite us in the ass, isn't it? Certainly seems that way. And this is not me having a little hissy for want of a new space heater or some Chilean grapes. Now, granted, there's another philosophy, there's another discussion to be had philosophically about eating locally and eating seasonally. Yeah. But still. We import our food. We import our stuff. And that makes us vulnerable, doesn't it? Tim from L.A. being helpful. So why are the ILWU striking? At the San Francisco Chronicle, Jack Heyman writes, "What's really brewing here is an assault on one of the last bastions of union power left in the United States, the ILWU, the International Longshore Workers Union. In the last 5 years, the ILWU has faced union-busting attacks by mining titan Rio Tinto and the ABCD grain monopolies, Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge Limited, Cargill Inc., and Louis Dreyfus Commodities, which control 90% of the world's grain distribution. In both cases, the union conceded key contract provisions, and now maritime monopoly, and now, yep, that's maritime. Maritime monopolies are smelling blood. Two of the biggest global port employers, Ports America Inc. and Stevedoring Services of America, were until recently owned in large part by the insurance monolith AIG and Goldman Sachs, respectively. Certainly not respectfully. This is Wall Street on the waterfront. And they're out to gut the power of the ILWU, the union hiring hall, and curtail union action by using arbitrators. Yet when longshore workers stop work, it's often because of safety issues in a dangerous industry where the rate of work-related fatalities exceeds that of firefighters. As Tim from LA points out, it's not about only asking for a raise, but for safety issues too. And I go back to what I said. I don't care what it is a working person wants. I, for the most part, want them to have it. I'm trying to figure out a situation in which I would not be supportive of labor against management. Hell, my issues with the United Mine Workers of America, pale shadow of itself that it now is, are not in relation to the rights of working people to be paid a fair wage for doing hard work and hopefully in reasonably safe and sane conditions. But once again, sure, it's union busting. But once again, we also, I mean, import and export is going to be a part of any functioning economy. But look what deregulation has gotten us. The more economic power concentrates in fewer hands, the more brutal it becomes. Does it not? Now, as we've talked about from time to time here on the program, the brand new urine-colored, snake flag-waving teabagging majority in the West Virginia legislature. Has decided that West Virginia's way forward to prosperity lies in slashing the wages of the few people in West Virginia who actually have good jobs. People in the building trades. There was a hearing in Charleston today at which famous third way aficionado Joe Manchin, Joe not really a Democrat Manchin, showed up. To try to beg the Republicans to please not completely crap on the construction workers. Because back when Joe was first running for governor, he reached out to organized labor and said, listen, I may not always agree with you, but you'll always have a seat at the table. And organized labor said, really? We get to sit at the table? We're behind you, Joe. And Joe largely lived up to expectations with regard to his agreements with organized labor, and they managed to beat back, because there was a Democratic majority in the legislature, attempts to slash working people's wages. Still there? Good. So Joe showed up for the hearing this morning, pleading, I suppose, can't we all just get along? Not with teabaggers, you can't. No. Because they're the stump licker bunch. And they'll listen to you say, can't we all just get along, until they get tired of you talking, and then stump licker swillers that they are, they'll punch you in the face, knock you to the ground, and start kicking the guts out of you until they decide that they have kicked you enough. And so, and this is one of those moments, this is one of those thorn-in-the-side moments, when we come to the realization of just how far behind the eight ball we really are on our side. I'm sorry it's not inspiring. It could be. Recognizing a problem is the first step towards solving it. But if you watch the electric TV box, or watch it through the miracle of the interweb tubes, you'll notice, for instance, that over on that morning program that I'm more prone to watch just because for some reason or another I find it more enjoyable than blithering idiots on ABC or CBS or CNN or God knows those babbling lumps of protoplasm on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. I'm talking, of course, about Morning Joe. You'll notice that there's no two or three times in the three-hour span that you will see a commercial with some guy riding a motorcycle talking about how much he loves working for the Koch brothers, because the Koch brothers love babies and bunnies, and they're bringing freedom to America. And there are ads from Caterpillar that, oddly enough, don't show them trundling around blasted moonscapes in Appalachia, but instead they're out there building schools. And then there's what's going on the people's airwaves in West Virginia on the radio stations. I heard this on one of the country radio stations. There are ads running in which two earnest-sounding people, these are people who were paid to do voiceover work, a man and a woman, talk about how our patriotic, I'm not shitting you, our patriotic conservative
brand new West Virginia legislative majority is out there working hard for West Virginians. And you know what? We figured out that if we just get rid of the prevailing wage, why, we can build all kinds of things all over West Virginia. And you know what can happen? Our children can come home to West Virginia. Yes, they can, because they left West Virginia because there weren't no jobs, because all them construction workers was keeping anybody from having a job in West Virginia, and our cheering's done left. But if we just cut the construction workers' pay, our cheering's will come home. No, really.
And I'm sure that a certain drop-dead, dirt, ignorant plurality in this state is lapping that up like a kitty does cream. You ever notice what happens to a kitty when they lap up cream? I mean, that trope is out there, how kittens love cream. And I guess they do. And they will. They'll go with their little sandpapery tongues. You don't want to be around them when the cream gets through because they're largely lactose intolerant. And they leave a really nasty, shitty mess behind when they're not puking all over the place. Well, that's going to be the summary effect of all the all the idiots who are, yeah, God bless West Virginia and God bless the urine-colored snake flag-waving teabagger majority for saving us from the construction workers, Marveline. Because by the time this Republican legislature is done, if they get their way, there is going to be a shitty mess left all over this state that's already in a shitty mess. By the way, the fire of the West Virginia bomb train, still burning. Yeah. They managed to get some of the cars back up on the tracks and back them away from the fire where maybe they won't blow up. But then again, they're full of oil, and, you know, these things apparently do just occasionally spontaneously combust. Dude, boom. Yeah, no kidding. And the Federal Railroad Administration is on the scene, and they just don't know quite what happened. I wonder how much the Railroad Administration has been gutted over the years by those self-same urine-stained snake flag-waving types.
Those job-killing regulations are going to kill Merck.
Wonder. Hard to know. But it's still burning. And I guess other traffic is being diverted onto other railroad tracks, so, I mean, I'm sure there are still bomb trains coming through. Right? It ain't so much thorn in the side Thursday anymore as it is thorn in the side every blessed day. How can an entire nation, well, not an entire nation, because there's a whole bunch of us who understand why it's going on. How can so many people in a nation look at things falling apart, look at the way working people are being treated, and say, must be the working people's fault. How many more lies are we going to buy from Wall Street-driven for-profit media? Well, I guess the answer to that is, how many more are they willing to tell? Because the Koch brothers love of America. At least that part of it that they can own. They love it so much they want to own all of it and all of us. Hey, good news to announce. I haven't said a word about fundraising this evening. Because, you know, we try to raise $150 every evening. And I wanted to let you know that Barbie just sent in, via the U.S. Postal Service, a Have a Show on Me. So have a show on Barbie. Just like we're having a show on Scott and Harold. Thank you, one and all, very kindly. Thank you, Barbie, for the Have a Show on Me. And if anybody else would like to jump out front, maybe we can get through this most brutal February catching up a little bit. I've been, well, on all of our behalfs, paying bills like a little crazy man. I admit I've been buying some propane, too. But, no. So, thank you, Barbie. Thank you very kindly. If you'd like to jump in and help out, of course, if you don't already know, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And let me explain something about that interface. I've had some inquiries and some correspondence. People say, I think that's awful nosy, that stuff you're asking for. And I agree. But the fact of the matter is, it's PayPal generated. But here's the catch. They're not all all the fields on there are not mandatory. They don't require, it doesn't require your input. So, you know, you put in who you are and how much you want to send, and I think an email address, and if you hit donate, boom, it'll take you to the second page, and that's where you make your, that's where you make your choices. And yes, indeed, as Ron notes, Barbie is a giver, just like her sister, News Ninja Carol Baker. I'm learning that giver thing from him. So that's very inspiring, Barbie. Thank you very kindly, and you've got thank yous coming in from the chat room. Carol Abel and Gerald jumping in with a thanks, Barbie. That's the one place where Gerald doesn't say, thanks, Obama. Right. And on the working person front, one other thing. I noted a story earlier, and silly me, I did not print it out. But apparently there has been some sort of annual meeting of all the outfits that do oil field service work. You know, the people who make the profits for the oil companies. You know, the people who do well service and fracking and, you know, there's there's thousands and tens of thousands of people who are involved in this. And for a very long time, you would see stories pop up, you know, the number one paying industry in America is the oil industry. So if you want to have a comfortable existence, go out there and learn your petroleum engineering. Guess what? Party's over. With what the Saudis have done in turn by cutting prices on the world market, they have put a big hurting on oil and natural gas production here in the United States. It is absolutely slobber knocked Vladimir Putin's Russia. And so at an industry meeting of oil field service companies, I heard this on National Petroleum Radio. That's where this came from. The exalted mucky mucks, many of whom probably have MBAs from Harvard, you know, just like Willard Romney. Have decided, and the way the guy explained it was, now listen up, y'all. Here's how it is. When Neiman Marcus, of course they have to use a Dallas-based department store to make their point, when Neiman Marcus announces they're going to have a sale and everything's going to be 40% off, yeah, you know the gag name for Neiman Marcus is needless markup. Well, they have a sale and now everything's going to be 40% off. Well, you don't go right over to Neiman Marcus and start and spend all your money before the sale, now do you? Well, no. You wait till the sale. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to wait till all these oil field service companies is willing to cut their prices by 40%. And we ain't going to do squat until you do. Oh, shit. It was not presented this way, but the fact of the matter is the Wall Street side of the oil industry has gone on strike against the people who produce the oil for them. Because, of course, they have a right to strike. And when I was hearing this, I immediately thought, well, I know whose hide that 40%'s coming out of. Wonder if they've got a union to stand up for those workers. Because I'm guessing the answer's largely no. So all those people who were making all that money in the oil business ain't gonna. Not nearly so much. Isn't that just charming? And what does that say about, you know, just where this country is now? Every answer to every economic problem involves sticking it to the working people. Oddly enough, in the course of this story, there was no mention of the fact, there was no mention of, say, the Koch brothers, because the Koch brothers are just absolute up to their freakish, giant, dangling earlobes in oil. There was no mention that the Koch brothers were going to take a pay cut. The Koch brothers don't take pay cuts. There was no mention of a pay cut to the executive hierarchy of ExxonMobil. Hey, stand by a minute. Sorry about that. Had to answer a question from Ferg. Sorry, these things happen when you're, well, no, I guess people don't come up and, you know, hey, in the for-profit media, but they do here. And I just had to answer a question from Berg. Comes with the territory. So, just to sort of put a cap on this portion, of this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I saw all of these stories that I've mentioned, and more than anything else, it pointed up a degree of dysfunction in this country that does not bode well. We're a country that can't produce our own. The only thing we can produce in this country, it seems anymore, are things that are toxic to us. Oil, gas, coal. That means in many senses, we have abandoned our status as a developed nation. We're in trouble, not to be just too much of a harbinger of joy, but we are. And without fail, who's taking it on the chin? Well, in the case of the NPR story about oil field services, one of the things that the reporter pointed out was that lower pay leads to greater risk, greater threats to worker safety, among other things. And it's true. It also leads to a greater likelihood of environmental damage and degradation. As if we didn't already have enough. I went over and looked at my my Twitter feed, and apparently several of those right-wing weirdos decided to troll the page. I blocked them, bad the trolls goodbye. But man, the level is stupid there. And they were all infuriated. They were driven absolutely hopping up and down, squealing, dead from the neck up crazy, by the fact that I made that one simple, unassailably true statement. That it's not ISIS that's blowing up trains in America. Bomb trains, but rather American corporations. And I got the usual litany, do you drive a car? Because bless their hearts, they, they put up a graphic over there at All In with Chris Hayes that said, what we need to do is leave this stuff in the ground. And they attributed the quote to me.
Do you drive a car? Why don't you commit to not using no petroleum for the rest of your life?
Yeah. You know, because they're idiots. And they cannot tolerate. And you know, this is one of those little hallmarks of fascism, if you will. That any criticism of the corporate right is immediately equated with some sort of treasonous conduct. When all I did was make a simple, factual statement. But that's not tolerable. Oh, good news coming in. Ron pointing out, but Bob, it's not all bad. Walmart just announced that they're giving their employees a raise. Yeah, I actually read about that a few weeks ago. The raise that they're giving their workers is the raise that's afforded them by an increase in the minimum wage in several different states, and they're paying for the increase in the minimum wage by cutting out some of their middle management's pay. Look, we gave them a raise. The workers always take it in the shorts. And isn't this an interesting little point-counterpoint between liberal progressive radio and, say, that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, or the oxymoron Flush Flemball? I'm not sitting here saying I only want lefty, progressive, liberal working people to have a good standard of living. I want everybody to have one. But on the right wing, that's the working people's fault. Goddamn unions! They're making too much money, says the guy making $55 million a year. But you know, I'm the lefty lunatic. Stupid. Yeah. So, oh, thank you. Good news. This just rolled in. Thank you, Bob. Bob in Texas has just jumped in to match Barbie's Have a Show on Me. So we'll be having a show on Bob. Thank you very kindly, Bob. That is magnificently, monumentally helpful going forward. Going to be some more bill paying going on tonight. Woo-wee! I enjoy that. So we are at, oh, yeah, we're about 7 minutes before the hour. And I'll end the filibobster here. And announce that the lines are open. Well, they're open to members of the community or people of goodwill. They're not open to bright farters, news gusters, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians, or repiglicans generally. See how it works? Because there's just not enough time in life for those folks. No. But if you are a person of goodwill, and if you're a person who wants to find solutions that don't involve asking people to, working people to take it in the shorts, yeah, the lines are open. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. That latter being the Gizmo line. We call the other one the Skype line. And jump right in. The conversation's fine. Hey, look, Robert in Australia, subject line, double plus good. Hey, Bob, double plus good. My pay went up from $10 an hour to $8 an hour. Well, don't you feel proud, Robert, that you can sacrifice like that for the greater good of our corporate betters? You must, certainly. So, yeah, we'll take our break. Green News Report coming up. This is listener-supported conversation radio, and it never ceases to amaze me the magnificent level of support that we receive to keep this little effort going. Truly, this is a wonderful community. We'll get the conversation going in fairly short order. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, how was you? It's Thursday, February 19, 2015.
Some say the blast sounded like a bomb and felt like an earthquake.
Another day, another oil explosion, this time at Exxon refinery in California.
The intelligence assessment describes some anti-pipeline and anti-oil sands activists as violent extremists.
Anti-petroleum activists are a security threat, says Canada. January 2015, the second hottest January on record, plus...
The best idea we ever had. Our belief that the country's most special places should belong not just to the rich, not just to the powerful, but belong to everybody.
President Obama designates three new national monuments.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
Just one more day of oil in trouble.
Yep. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, earlier this week we reported there were two oil train derailments in North America. We need to issue a correction. In fact, there have been three in the past week.
Yes.
And just as I predicted, by the way, as the fire is still smoldering in West Virginia from that huge oil train explosion out there, Keystone XL pipeline proponents are once again claiming that this is why we need to build the pipeline. Here's Fox News, of course.
Proponents of Keystone XL say their pipeline would get oil to market cheaper and far safer than the trains.
Now, in fact, oil transport by train has exploded in this country, pardon the pun. Back in 2008, there was only about 10,000 train cars. Now, as of 2014, about 500,000 of these oil train cars are crisscrossing the country. So, wouldn't it be safer to build the pipeline?
No, you're right. Oil train traffic has increased 4,000%. But as far as total amount of oil spilled, pipelines still spill about three times more.
So even though shipment by oil bomb train has boomed over the past 6 years, as far as the environment goes, pipelines are still far more dangerous.
Overall, yeah.
Someone needs to tell Fox News. I'm sure they're waiting to hear it. And speaking of oil explosions, what do you have for us today, Desi?
Well, for the second time in a week, the oil industry was involved in a major explosion and fire near people's homes. A huge explosion on Wednesday destroyed sections of a 100-year-old Exxon refinery in Torrance, California.
How old?
107 years.
And it's still in operation.
Yes.
Giant flames visible for miles. The ground shaking felt for miles as well. An explosion rocked this Torrance refinery, ripping apart structures and crushing cars.
Yeah. Only minor injuries were reported. 13 schools near the refinery were ordered to shelter in place for several hours because what else are they going to do? Air quality was affected, but officials said it stayed within acceptable limits. The explosion measured the equivalent to a 1.7 earthquake on the Richter scale. The cause of the blast is still under investigation.
Here's the cause. Oil blows up. Just saying.
In Canada, a leaked intelligence memo from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police calls Indigenous tribes and environmentalists who oppose oil and gas development a growing threat to Canada's national security.
The intelligence assessment describes some anti-pipeline and anti-oil sands activists as violent extremists.
The January 2014 report lumps all groups against the oil industry together, describing them as a highly organized and well-financed anti-Canadian petroleum movement.
See, I knew you were a terrorist.
They called them anti-Canadian. Canada's conservative Harper administration is currently pushing to expand broad anti-terror legislation to include anybody who interferes with, quote, critical infrastructure or the economic and financial stability of Canada, and even allows preventive detention of people who might do something.
It's long been said, when the U.S. sneezes, Canada catches a cold. It sounds like Canada has caught the flu. I'm sorry, Canada.
And disturbingly, that secret memo also questions the science on global warming.
Naturally.
Here in the U.S., the FBI is ramping up monitoring of anti-Keystone XL pipeline activists at their homes and workplaces.
Oh, hello, FBI.
Meanwhile, the planet is still warming. After 2014 clocked in as the hottest year on record, the month of January in 2015 was the second hottest January on record, according to NASA and NOAA.
Those liars.
President Obama this week used his executive authority to protect three new national monuments from development for all Americans. Browns Canyon National Monument in Colorado, Hanaoli'oli Internment Camp in Hawaii, and the Pullman Historic District of Chicago, prompting one congressional Republican to call him King Obama.
Of course he did. As Obama himself noted,
conservation is a truly American idea.
Yeah. Back when we had Republicans like Teddy Roosevelt and, even Richard Nixon.
Yeah, back when conservatives actually believed in conservation.
For much more on those stories and all of them that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, where we hope you will give us a good review, and that helps other people find our reports easier. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Is this land made for you and me?
Meanwhile, the Koch brothers are humming along, saying, "No, it's not." This is the Horn, Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is you need me to tell you what time it is. It's 6 minutes past the hour. Let's run over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
You guys, your little Green News Report just threw me for a loop. I was calling for something else, and then I hear that story about Canadians. Calling activists terrorists. Is that fascism on the march or what?
In shiny black boots, absolutely, John. So you were grabbed by that report, so was I, but let me point out the part that I found. I laughed out loud here. Luckily the mic was off. I snorted Fanta orange pop across the screen. The part about how the activists are well financed. That was a real knee slapper, John, because this is an issue that has to be addressed somewhere down the road. The organizations, I guess, some of them at least, are well financed, but for the most part, at least the people I see at the ones I go to, most of them are folks who are existing on the margins of existence. Some of them by choice, and some of them by necessity, and some of them by dint of the fact that, you've been arrested 19 times for protesting? We're not going to hire you at Giant Mega Corporation of America. You're a troublemaker. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
You might have somebody who might be called, let's say, a regional environmental justice coordinator yanking down $75,000 a year, but that person is in turn riding on the backs of a whole bunch of grassroots volunteer activists. You know, one of the things I've said about Cold River Mountain Watch for so long, and that's why I credit them every night with being the hardest working, bravest people I know, you got people who are making barely minimum wage, who are sweating the difference between the power bill and food, right? And they bravely and boldly go out every day and oppose billionaires who have enough economic power to crush them, and would if they could get away with it, and have tried.
Oh yeah, I mean you almost probably guessed that I was on call. You started talking about working people and economics and stuff. You could almost probably throw a that John's gonna call because I know he's gonna start bitching again.
Well, you know, that's what I do. I get up in the morning. That damn John.
Yeah, that's all, bitch. It gets me. I mean, you know, they sit there and it shows you how it works. You know, you made the comment about Walmart. I saw the damn paper. It was like, We're going to spend $1 billion to give people pay raises. Yeah, because you were forced to. But they'll twist it around and make it seem like they did it on their own accord. and, you know, the rubes out there will go, see, Walmart is such a great people. They hire some old senior citizen to stand in front and go, welcome to Walmart, get your shit and get out. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd feel better if that's what they actually said. But you know what? Those people are, that's even a gone America too. I remember when Walmart would hire older Americans. Welcome to Walmart. God bless America. They're gone.
Yeah, I mean,
they're gone.
Well, actually, I went into Walmart yesterday, and they had a and I'm guessing at the cause, I'm assuming it was a Down syndrome person that had the little vest on, and they were so, you know, it was like, hi, welcome to Walmart, and they were so cheerful, you just had to smile at them and everything, but it was like.
And that's the last smile that happens in Walmart. Did you ever notice that there's nobody laughing in Walmart?
No, there's no laughter in Walmart. And, you know, the thing that sparked me to call was that, I may have mentioned this at some point in time in one of our previous conversations, but, I'm going to maybe be off by a year or so, but about 2003, 2004, I took a few months off the over-the-road thing. I pulled containers up in Seattle. And of course, I did it right when there was the last big super longshoreman strike was going on. And, they would do their work slowdowns, and, you know, I'd go check in with a container and sit, you know, sit for an hour and a half waiting at the gate to get checked through and stuff like that. And the primary push for that particular strike is that there was a big push by the, port management companies to try to, get rid of the gate, workers. The ones that would do the in gates and the out gates and do the checking of the containers and seals and all that stuff, and they wanted to outsource it to a remote control to an operation in Utah, so that somebody in Utah making $5 an hour, $5.50, something like that, would look at a TV monitor and would use the TV monitor to see the seal, the container number, and run through the computer and get the check bills and all that printed out and everything else, because the port workers were making $35, $40 an hour, and they could hire a bunch of, you know, college kids working a job in addition to their schooling and make $5, $5.50, $6 an hour. Like I said, it's been, 13 years ago.
Yeah, and there's a certain relevance in what you mentioned there in terms of the bomb train that blew up here in West Virginia, John, because you can make an argument that the two guys at the front of that train knew less about what was happening on their train than somebody watching a computer monitor in Jacksonville, Florida, because that's where all the workers for CSX went, the brakemen and the linemen and the people that made railroading safe in America got their jobs eliminated when computers came along and some more bigger asshole degreed person from Harvard said, why, we can save a lot of money and pay much larger shareholder profits, and hey, the CEO can have a lot more money if we just get rid of some working people.
Yeah, I mean, we had a piece of this conversation before, but, you know, capitalism only respects capital. If they have to spend any money on workers, that's money that's the least productive use of capital.
Yeah, it's almost like they think money makes itself.
Well, in a capitalist world, it does. And I won't bore you with the same conversation we had before, but if you know, most things done are done by financing. If you want to buy equipment, you want to, you know, build a building, you want to upgrade your systems or whatever, you're going to go to a bank and finance it. Well, so the first thing you're going to be worried about from that point on is to repay that loan. Every business is basically owned by the bank. When somebody said, you know, when you have, you know, back in the days when I was a little bit younger and stupider, I toyed around with libertarianism and I did the little speeches and stuff for them and stuff. And I would ask the
And then you sobered up.
Well, yeah, I stopped drinking and stopped taking drugs. That was the thing. And I sat there and asked the question. And I would, you know, when I started my little bit, when we do the meet and greets, and I'd ask the question, I'd say, you know, how many of you own your own home? And, you know, about 7, 8 people would stick their hand up in the air. And then I'd go through my dog and pony show, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd ask the question at the end. I say, let's ask a question again. How many own your own home? And you might get one person, because by that time they realize that, no, the banks own everything. If you go out and get a loan, and if you're a business person, you're going to need financing. I'm in the trucking business. The trucks are either leased or they're bought on credit. And so all that money has to be paid back. Those are the first things. But the money that goes to workers is not coming back to the bankers. It's not coming back to the, you know, the best they can
do.
It's
just going into the economy and making the world safe for the bankers.
Right. But they don't see it that way. If they can't add it up, if they can't put it on that double entry bookkeeping form that says, we spent this much and we got all this back plus this, then to them, it's a loss. Labor is a loss leader for banking,
right.
Financing.
And anybody, and everything. And John, anybody who's ever watched a corporation go through a bankruptcy knows that. Because the first thing that happens is the highfalutin bankruptcy lawyers sit down, and on that loss side of the bankruptcy form, they put down it's not losses, they're listed as liabilities. You know, you really find out what corporate America thinks of working people when you see one of their bankruptcy filings. Liabilities, labor, salary.
Yeah, you remember the
pensions,
you remember the bankruptcy you remember the bankruptcy of the bakery about a year or two ago, back in the election time, when that whole operation has been reactivated. You got your Hostess Twinkies and stuff are back, but they're owned by a non-union outfit, I think out of Florida now, but I think it's Bimbo or something like that, went and bought up the various name brands, which is really kind of weird when you think about it. That the name of something actually has more commercial value than the actual product itself. That's almost scary.
That's the concept of buying the goodwill of the business.
Yeah. And it's like I said, I got sparked to call you, and I was like, you know, this is right kind of like what I call my wheelhouse here, is, you know, I'm about the smartest dumb person when it comes to economics and things like that. And this is just another classic gold-plated spanking brand new example of, you know, of the corporatization of America. Back when the textile
and not to quibble over vocabulary, but it's the pauperization of America. This country. I mean, Theodore Roosevelt, bless his heart, with all of his flaws, would look at 2015 America and say, what are you people thinking? Because it was his policies at the early part of the 20th century that actually kept a wave of socialism in check. And you know, maybe violent revolution. And this is free advice to the capitalists. If you don't want a time to come when you all get the free tumbril rides, then you might want to engage in a little self-regulation, a little navel-gazing, and maintain the society that maintains you. I mean, this goes back to Andrew Carnegie feeling the flames of hell licking at the soles of his tender feet and deciding to build libraries. But that kind of philanthropy is not enough. People have got to be able to survive. And we ain't surviving.
No.
And, you know, newsflash to the teabaggers and the booger eaters, it's not because there's a socialist in the White House, because there ain't. As a socialist, please let me explain to the teabaggers, Barack Obama is a capitalist all the way to his very core.
Oh yeah, he's bought and paid for by the banks. I mean, I made a comment years ago back when he was first elected, and I mean, I supported the idea of him when he was first running, but the closer that the reality of his possibility of being elected president that he got to, especially after New Hampshire and, you know, and once Hillary Clinton lost a couple of the southern states.
Well, I mean, look, in 2008 and 2012, I had a choice between a hard right-wing neo-fascist in either Bomber John McCain or Bishop Willard, or a center-right capitalist. Given those two choices, I chose the center-right capitalist.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing about democracy in itself. It's the fact that, you know, we only get to pick a pre-chosen, predetermined, almost pre-packaged horse. You got horse A, you got horse B. You got a choice.
Right.
And it sucks because, like I said, when Obama first started running, he was for national health care, universal health care. He was for a strong investigation about NSA. He was against all this, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you could take almost any policy he had, and when he first started running, he was to the left.
Right, and then the great Bill Hicks clip, peace be upon him, where he explains that every president since November 22nd, 1963, gets into office, and they sit him down in a dark room, and they start showing him a film. And the new president says, wait a minute, this is not the Zapruder film. And the guy running the projector says, exactly. And the new president says, where do I sign? Because you can have all the high-toned aspirations in the world you want going into the Oval Office. But then they sit down and they explain the way of the world to you, the facts of life, and unless you're in the middle of a crisis like FDR was, well, and remember the Bush family, among others, tried to foment a coup against FDR.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I mean it's real, it's history, it's unassailable, and so you're not going to get how do I put this? Well, I think I said it, but maybe I said it in our last conversation, John. Bernie Sanders would not get to be the socialist Bernie Sanders would like to be if Bernie Sanders got into the White House, because structurally, I mean, this is almost like down to the laws of physics. An empire can't tolerate that. Because it destroys the empire.
Yeah. That's the truth of it. I mean, you know, President Sanders would be almost, especially in this environment, he'd be a little island all by himself, and he'd be beat on almost on a daily basis.
Well, yeah,
And
just like Barack Obama gets into the White House, it's January the 21st, it's January 21st, 2009, and they say, listen, come here, Barack, come here. I know you said all that stuff about health care, and I know you said all that stuff about the national security. I know, and domestic spying. I know, and you know what? We know you feel that way. But they will kill your ass if you keep doing that. If you keep talking that now, you're toast. You're going to become a famous assassinated American president. And as it is, and as it is, even with him being the center-right president that he is, unless those stories that I read were lying, he had the Secret Service, struggling with ineptness that they are, has fielded more death threats against him than any other president in history. Since there's been a Secret Service, there have been more death threats against Barack Obama than there were against Abraham Lincoln.
I heard it 2 days ago in the damn truck stop. They all heard about that when that bomb came, blew up, you know, had some, you know, tobacco chewing and redneck yahoo going, you should be waiting after that pop line because.
Hey, John.
I just looked at him. I was like, "Wow." You know, and he quoted me a figure. Are you ready for this?
I can't wait.
that pipeline is a job creator. That will create 65,000 jobs.
Well, damn, that's a miracle because John Boehner only said 42,000.
I don't know. I asked him, I said, where do you get this information from? He said, right there on the TV. And I said, what channel? Well, he said, Fox, of course. And I'm going, John, don't get into a fight today.
No, come on. Take a breath, John. Walk away.
Eat your carrots, John. Crunch.
Grind.
But, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Now, call me an optimist, call me a kindly thinker. The $1.25 an hour that Chinese worker makes, he's one, maybe two generations from the farm. That $1.25 an hour in Renminbi, I think is the Chinese currency, Renminbi or whatever the hell it is.
I thought it was the yuan or something.
I think it's a couple different words. That's Renminbi, I think is what it's actually officially called or something like that. But anyway, to him, he's dancing down the dusty, unpaved streets of his village. He's dancing because he can buy things like a little transistor radio or a smartphone that's been subsidized by the company that he builds the smartphones for. And he can have a taste of the modern world. And for him, this is great news.
Yeah, but John, he only gets to dance down those dusty streets twice a year.
Exactly.
Remember the train disaster of a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think Chinese industrialism is something that is probably unfathomable to Americans, and maybe to a lot of people in the developed world, because people come from the countryside, and they live in dormitories, and they work 12 hours a day, where they stand on their feet, and it's 6 days a week, and once or twice a year, they get to get on a train and go home and see their loved ones. Now, they're fed and they're housed and all of that, and that lets them pile up money and send it home to those dusty streets. Of course, Steve in China may be listening, and if he'd care to elaborate on this, you know, I'd love to know it. I'd love to have an idea of what it's like. Uh-oh, lost John. But it's even at $1.25 an hour in whatever economy it is. No, there's no workers' paradise anywhere in this country, or mostly anywhere in this world. And the closest you get is, maybe people with good jobs in the EU. Robert in Australia said, "Yay, I got a pay raise from $10 an hour to $8 an hour." And Gerald chimed in and said, "Please tell Robert in Australia that the other good news is he will have another half liter of Victory Gin in his rations for the month." Yeah, no kidding. John, I enjoyed our conversation. I think your signal may have been degrading or something, or maybe it was mine. But that line, 304-574-8178, is now open. Let's run over to the Gizmo line, where the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas stand has been waiting.
Bob, you are too kind. I'm telling you, you are too kind.
I am merely acting upon the expressed will of the Horn Family Commune congregation, and the name that News Ninja Carol Baker gave you.
Oh wow! Well, you all are too kind. But I really enjoy your conversations with John. You know, he's got his ear to the ground, to say the least. And I called about a rose bush in my side without the roses. You know.
Yeah.
But before I review a couple of those, I'm struck by your conversation with John about Marxism.
Yes.
Are you following what's going on in Greece? I'm sure you are.
I am.
Yeah. So I heard this interview today, and it went on, what's Amy Goodman's show? Pacifica.
Democracy Now.
Yeah, Democracy Now, thanks. So there's this journalist from the UK who was giving the interview, and he was also helping a couple of people in Greece. He was mentoring them to help them make a film. Anyway, here's the dynamic he explained, and you probably already know about this. In trying to settle that debt, Greece is sending representative, its people to the Eurozone and just to discuss the situation with the German bankers and on, who are overtly Marxist, period. I mean, they have elected Marxists, and they are being hardline about this debt, and to compound that Marxist line, this is a new bunch of elected people. To compound that, there are people in Greece, according to this reporter, who remember what the Germans did in World War II, and they're not real happy about, you know.
Yeah, there's rather a long memory for that, isn't there?
Right, and people in the UK, as you may know, are expressing that sentiment, like, according to this reporter, like, why should we be involved in Germany's news in this regard? But what struck me about the conversation is the reporter explained that they had elected centrist, what we would call centrist Democrats. Now, the reporter equated centrist Democrats to the Elizabeth Warren branch, which is, that's interesting, you know,
right.
Centrist. And the Labor Party, where he comes from. He says, there's no more space for that. After those centrist Democratic types, collaborated with the austerity program, the Greeks don't want anything to do with them. So that's why people who would, according to this reporter, he's saying that's why people from the professional class to the working class who would never before think of voting Marxist, there's no space for anything else for them. So they're going Marxist. And so then he called people's attention to the situation in Spain. So I just thought that was real interesting. I don't know if things in this country would ever get to the point where we said, oh, the centrist Democrats, they really sold us down the river. Well, the only place we can go is to the far, far, far left Marxist place. I don't think that could happen here, but
I think the thing that prevents that from happening, Diane, is the currency, simply put. Now, on both the right and the left, you'll hear people hollering about the Fed, and there's plenty to holler about. But this is, you know, this is the most stable. Well, I mean, there's that old saying out there, you know, sound is a pound. But this is arguably the most stable currency on the planet. And then what's making the Greek situation interesting vis-a-vis the Eurozone is that relatively small country has the power to destroy that entire currency system. And so there is a very delicate and very dangerous dance taking place between Greece and, for the most part, you know, Germany pulls the strings because Germany and France are the two largest guarantors of the euro.
Now, the UK is not in the zone.
No, well, they're not. Yeah. They're not in that part of it. They're not. You know, they didn't give up the pound.
But.
So the last I heard was that Greece had asked for an extension, a 30-day extension.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing today.
Germany said nine.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have Herman Cain to say 999. But the thing is, if in a way, oh no, I don't like that analogy. I'm not going to use it. But the thing is, if Greece says screw you and your debt, and the Greek people decide that they're going to suck it up and engage in some common shared sacrifice and see what happens and go back to the drachma,
yeah,
then what's to stop the next state from saying, yeah, you shove your debt too, and the next thing the euro falls apart and the relative financial unpleasantness in which the eurozone finds itself becomes a full-on, I mean, it's already being described as a crisis. You're much better at economics than I am. But then it becomes a disaster.
I never studied the international economics as much as I did domestic, but at any rate, I don't really, in academic terms, I don't really dabble a lot in that area. So I'm always learning, and I podcast a lot to hear what's going on. Now, the reporter said, and I hadn't really thought of this, that the countries in the eurozone had not aligned their tax policies, and that's why we're seeing this. Their tax policies weren't aligned. But I hear you about the currency. He also said that if it hit, well, he didn't say if it hits the fan, but I'm saying that the major banks in Greece will go under. So there's that. Which to me suggests...
Oh, no. To just renounce and reestablish the drachma would re-enter the capital market or the currency exchanges, worth somewhat less than a Deutschmark in 1926. You know, it'd take three wheelbarrows full to buy a loaf of bread.
But in terms of they're losing their banking system, you're saying, and then some.
Yeah.
Well, what was of most interest to me, I mean, all this is kind of horrifying because that poor country, what they've been put through is just, it's remarkable. But what struck me is even if we don't see that same extreme dynamic, I was struck by the analysis that the central democratic types, with their complicity with pushing austerity programs and implementing them, had created a vacuum which was being filled by, in that case, Marxism, but it would sure be interesting if something like that would happen here. I don't think it could happen in the same way. But even if there was a slight tendency, I'd be watching it. You know, I just out of a real curiosity and interest into what might happen. Not being hopeful or expecting anything in particular.
I'm sorry, Diane, I had a little problem with your connection there for a minute.
Oh, really? Oh, no, that's okay. I was just saying that I'm just watching the kind of dynamic that where the centrist Democrats lose a lot of adherence.
Well, let's understand that one of the great inherent threats inside one of these dynamics is that it seems like at least within the history of the last 100 years or so, that the people who fill that gap are the people who are good at filling that gap, Diane, and that's the fascists. There's already a strong fascist movement inside Greece.
That's true. But from the description I heard today, I wasn't hearing that the even bulk of people who were moving towards Marxism were fascist. I mean, I know there are fascists there, and in Spain, and here, you know, and in Germany, and I know they're out there. And in Ferguson, you know. They're out there moving around on the
I think one of the reasons that they're good at doing this is they're ready when their moment comes. Look, you can see a certain equivalency here in the United States with the libertarians who holler about, oh, it's all gonna collapse, it's gonna collapse, it's all blah, blah, blah. And you know what? They're ready to mobilize if it does.
And we've already seen that fascism is on the march all over Europe.
Yeah, Ukraine for sure, as we know, right. Yeah, this is sort of a scary point. I mean, it kind of makes the thorns in my side pale by comparison, but...
The thorns fester.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's time to panic, but I have it, Diane, this sense of the calm before the storm.
Waiting
for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, but I've had that feeling for a while, and palpably, tangibly, and it would happen when I'd go outside in the morning with my cup of tea into my wonderful backyard with the cats who visit and flowers and garden. I hear dissertation defenses while I'm on my cordless out there in the garden. My life is good, you know. But so I go out into that atmosphere, and it's a sunny Kansas day, and the tape that's been running through my mind for at least 5 years is, the last days of Pompeii.
Yeah, and I think that's apt, Diane, because in the last days of Pompeii, there in 79 of the Common Era, Vesuvius would periodically belch smoke, but Vesuvius had always belched smoke. But then they began to notice funny things. They had this elaborate, magnificently engineered aqueduct system that has not been matched to this day, really. And weird things started happening with the aqueducts. And the next thing you know, the place is buried for 1800 years below ash. And we're not as far away from that as we think we are.
Well, not with these oil explosions. I mean the warning signs, these explosions, when you just went through and reported on very nicely on Chris Hayes. I watched that.
Oh, thank you. I really was worried, Diane, because the audio broke up in my in-ear monitor, and
yeah.
I really was getting like one in every four words. So I hope
Oh, you couldn't tell that. And I do interviews. I watch closely. I'm just trained to watch closely, and I really liked what came through. Because in that medium, something has to come through, short and sweet, as you know. It's not if, it's when. That was real appropriate, strongly appropriate. Because you were saying that as we were watching on these screens, these big fireballs.
Inside the United States, we have thus far been lucky, and I use that in its truest and most literal sense of the word. There's no real reason why people should not. I mean, it is just luck that they blow up where they do. There's a video out there, a YouTube video that somebody just happened to shoot of that train going by, in Marmette, West Virginia. And if that thing had gone up there, I mean, there's lots of houses around, and could conceivably affect a chemical plant across the river. Or the coal loading, the barge loading facility. Can you imagine one of those things blowing up and maybe, setting fire to a few hundred tons or thousand tons of coal?
God.
You'd be able to see the smoke plume from space.
And would the powers that be do anything then?
Yeah, they'd do something. Gert would run to the microphone and say, "Well, I want to let people know that this has nothing to do with coal, even if the coal was burning."
Yeah, but, it's just too bad that these idiots we elect can't think outside of certain bought-out parameters. I mean, it could happen anywhere. That's the point. I mean, almost anywhere. Where did the trains go? Where these particular trains go with this particular cargo? It could happen along that track. Anywhere. So why can't people, we just don't have a system where people are thinking beyond real narrow defensive parameters. So, you know, we're screwed. We're going to be screwed.
But there are those of us who are determined to try to unscrew us.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you get the message out, and I don't know what else you can do.
I was thinking, because I do this. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm some sort of wonk or pundit or anything, because I'm not. But I just sit around thinking about stuff sometimes. Sometimes I write it down. Other times I just sort of think it through and wonder if it's going to find its way into the program. But and this is that case. You know, here in West Virginia, we see all of a sudden, coal keeps the lights on, when in fact it's less than 40% of our national energy generation portfolio. But and mountaintop removal is less than 4% of that 40% that. But still, we got to have hellscapes, and we got to blow up Appalachia. But the fact of the matter is, and Dr. John and I have talked about this some too, because you know, if you take that long view of human history, things change. For instance, you said that you felt like the other shoe was going to drop for quite some time.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite some time to you, Diane.
No.
But
it's
not even a 1 second tick in the course of a century.
Sure.
Or hardly even in a decade. So we have to be careful about how we impose our sort of anthropogenic, is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Impression on how events ebb and flow. If there's ever a time when human beings start living longer than we do now, then how we see events unfold is going to unfold as well. And it goes back a little bit, for instance, not to just sit here and filibuster our conversation, but it goes back, for instance, to what I was saying about working people. Well, you know, we have almost reached a place where only the older members of our culture can remember the vibrant middle class of the mid to late 1950s and the 1960s and the early 70s. There's only a certain portion of this country that can remember a unionized America where more people had access to the rungs of the upward of the ladder to upward mobility. And I've said before that part of the reason that that Republicans can get away with saying things like, you know, privatize Social Security is that the people who lived through the Great Depression are mostly dead now. So there is no active living memory, and there's no plurality of people who have had that that transgenerational wisdom transmitted to them. And so, having said all that, I got to thinking earlier today about stories my mother told me. She was born in 1925. And she was born in a house without electricity, Diane. And in the earliest part of her life, they got electricity maybe in the early 1930s. And at first, the electricity they had was via Delco batteries. And so you would use the batteries for your lights, and then when the battery ran down, you'd take it and swap it for a new battery. You know, we're talking about big battery units.
Uh-huh.
And you know, bless her heart, she would have been 90 last year. So that means that the period of full electrification of the country is considerably less than a century old. And yet we have forgotten a world that didn't have it. And so when one of these right-wing twits talks to me, "Did you ever drive a car?" Well, or it tells me that coal keeps the lights on, I kind of lose it, because we have to understand that the electric utilities, for instance, with which we have to deal, those are monopolies that were allowed to exist, and they were allowed to exist primarily to serve a capitalist model and shareholders and all of that, but they were out of hand by the FDR administration, Diane. Because FDR said to the utilities, he said, "Well, it's too expensive for us to run electrical wires way out there in the boonies." So FDR said, "Okay, we're going to create the Rural Electrification Administration, and we're going to do it." and you're not going to get the business. Screw you. And they went, wait a minute. And they had to be dragged kicking and screaming into actually serving the public.
Yeah, should have just nationalized it.
Right, when we could have. But the fact of the matter, is, it's an incredibly inefficient system.
Sure.
I mean, you lose vast. First of all, a lump of coal, the actual thermal energy of a lump of coal, we only get about 30% of its potential out of it, and then we distribute it down lines through, you know, substations and whatnot, and there, you know, and there's always energy lost in the transfer. So you got to burn a lot more to get what you get. Now, compare that instead with an enlightened society that chooses, that says, okay, every house, I mean, and you know, maybe you make it part of the building code. You know, just like, you know, there are codes that say you can do this and you can't do that in building a building now. Well, maybe it becomes a part of a code that you can't build a building that does not have sufficient solar paneling on its roof to power its essential functions. Now, if that much of it's coming from solar, then the amount of power that has to come in from a centralized, distant station goes down dramatically, doesn't it?
We're not good at.
No, we're not bright enough to do that. You know, they're trying to do it in Germany.
Yeah, but I don't think we have to necessarily live longer to have the understanding. You mentioned, I mean, that would certainly help, but if we had any kind of educational system, this knowledge would get passed through generations.
Well, I don't entirely disagree with you on that principle.
I mean, Howard Zinn's book, Required Reading, and I mean, a lot of the stuff I know because I went and got a master's in economics at a place where we studied Keynesian economics from the Great Depression and blah, blah, blah. And boy, were my eyes open. Well, I should have gotten that in high school. And I went to one of the best high schools, you know, money could buy, taxpayer money could buy, really, at the time. And I had to go to a master's level to get Marxism, Great Depression, knowledge about the Great Depression and Keynesian economics. And boy, once I saw Keynesian economics, oh, there's nothing the right wing can say to me about the Laffer curve or trickle down. I just laugh. I just think that's the biggest ruse. But we're kind of stuck with what we have right now. And
well, and that's, you know, that's the $64 question, Diane. What it's not necessarily trying to figure out the full blown Athena from the head of Zeus system that comes after capitalism collapses. The real genius, the real Nobel Prize stuff, is going to happen for the people who figure out what the transition looks like.
Uh huh. Right. Exactly. Well, and they're there, and they're speaking, and they have some platforms, despite the right-wing agenda. I would like to, if I may, mention the thorn in the side that prompted my
Absolutely.
Call.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which, I mean, there's a couple of them, and, you know, on the ground in Kansas, it's, we have bad dynamics here. I mean, it's no secret. But we haven't seen the full impact of what Brownback has done. Now,
no, that's not going to come along until he is a bitter memory in the minds of the people of Kansas.
Right, and Kathleen Sebelius was in Lawrence the other day, and she, you know, I mean, can you imagine? We went from Sebelius to Brownback.
Yeah, and sometimes I think that. That presidents, and I think in terms of Democratic presidents, they do a profound disservice to the people of the given states when they take a good governor and elevate them to some cabinet level position, and which then subjects the given state to the tender mercies of right wing money and right wing politics.
Right. The day I heard that, I was having coffee with my friend who used to be the a reporter for Topeka Capital Journal, and he looked at me, you know, when the announcement of, that Kathleen Sebelius was nabbed, you know, for cabinet position, he said, oh, it won't take long at all now. I mean, he knew, and he'd been reporting on the Capitol for many years. But besides that budget situation, there's something else going on. I was a couple days, well, I don't know, 5 days ago, I guess, I was reading the email newsletter that we get from campus, from the university media office. And so I may have mentioned before, this is where we get a lot of important announcements of events and so on. People who are doing certain research, new people hired, whatever the media office thinks that the community, including alums and the broader community, needs to know. So I see this letter from the president of the university, and the first paragraph says something like this. Despite what you may have inferred from recent news reports, this university is committed to inclusiveness and will not tolerate discrimination against the LGBT community, or something like that. I'm like, what? What is
that? Yeah.
What? That? I mean, the president has chosen to send a special message. We don't get messages like that very often. The last one was when the president and provost spoke out in support of the Black Student Union speaking out against what happened in Ferguson. And so, I mean, we are very lucky with our current president and provost, and they have brought the campus a long way forward and also backwards in terms of reaching to our progressive roots here and then reenacting those roots in terms of, you know, how we should be conducting ourselves presently. So I started Googling news reports, and there, it didn't take but one Google to see that Brownback had reversed one of Sebelius's former executive orders that forbade discrimination on the job market against the gay community. And so, you know, like, you know, he just has to do that. You know, he's just compelled to do that. And our president was just saying, not here, not in our backyard. And so there's that. And I was sort of watching my reaction, because I just feel I must watch my reaction. And I start swearing like a sailor. You know?
I got to admit, I'd pay money to hear that.
Yeah, well, it's not going to happen on the radio, because I do a lot of radio interviews, and I want to keep a self-editing function in place.
Oh, no. I'm not asking you to bust out or anything.
People
but
who do swear, and I love hearing them, but there is a person on campus. I go into her office, shut the door, I swear like a sailor. She laughs like she's watching a circus. It's over, I leave. I do that. Just because sometimes it's just like the only reasonable response. So after I swear like a sailor.
Now, see, you've given the Hornedistas something to fantasize over now, Diane.
Well, let's just say when I hear people call in and do that, I love it, because it is the only reasonable response. Well, it's one of the reasonable responses. But I was kind of watching my response to that, and within 2 minutes, I was Googling on the university website to find out how I could get training as faculty to be one of those faculty on campus that's a safe zone. I don't know if you ever heard of
that. No, I do know what that is.
But you do know. Okay. So, you know, I was thinking, well, there's still, you know, it was sort of my way of thinking, well, where we live and breathe, he doesn't have to call those shots. The president says that. I, as faculty, have a really, really nice office. I can open it up to anyone who wants to come in. I just need to get the training to know how to do it properly.
Yeah.
You know, so I can help them through channels. So I was like, well, good. Our president has drawn the line, and good. Our university has this training for the – and I looked, and there were like seven training sessions scheduled through the leadership studies school. So I was like, okay, that's good. Where we live and breathe, we have these options, and they're constructive, and they're motivated by our community principles. Of course, the bad thing, when you think of these universities declining, one way to decline, they can decline, is that a president of ours, like ours, could go elsewhere. You know,
yeah.
Could go, easily go elsewhere. Kansas State is a beautiful stepping stone. Those of us there, we got our PhDs elsewhere. Many of us can go elsewhere, if you know what I mean. We can go elsewhere. We don't have to sit there. And I'm not so worried about faculty, but a president like that, if the budget cuts get too bad, and if they make his life miserable by saying, you know, these silly things about discrimination that's legal, or I don't know that there's much they can do on campus about that. I mean, he has other places he can be. So there's another way where the situation could decline because of these antics. I'm hoping not, but that's a reality. And the other thing is, but the good news is he pushed back at the university, has programs to put in place to prevent abuse. So that's good. The other thing is, another option, a kind of a way of pushing back, I guess. I don't know if you recall, but I told you I was on the steering committee for this progressive lecture series at the university.
Yes.
Long standing. Well, we're bringing Thomas Franks in again in October. What's the matter with Kansas?
Yeah, and the follow-up lecture is going to be, there's still something the matter with Kansas.
No, oh, and the follow-up lecture in November. This is the genius of the head of the committee. I mean, I voted for bringing Franks in again, and we'll have to have overflow halls. It'll be so crowded.
And I'm sure there will be some knuckle-breathing mouthwalkers out there. Yeah. Why does he hate Kansas?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I mean, it's kind of orderly in that people have to walk up to the microphone and ask questions.
No. I'm just talking about him sitting in the Barca loungers out in the middle of the wheat field.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. The farmers are mad at Brownback because they know their property taxes are going to go up. That's in the news. People are mad at Brownback because he's going after our cherished highway system. I mean, I don't know. People are mad because their kids are going to be in larger classes. I mean, some people may sit around, but a lot of people know about the impacts or they're already feeling them. And by the way, when I was Googling about these, he imposed another round of budget cuts on us that we didn't expect, actually.
Yes.
And so I was Googling to see what the local press, the regional press, was saying. And there was a report. Actually, I was told by a person in the know that Brownback didn't want the original budget cuts to be as bad as they were, but his Tea Party legislators
insisted upon it.
Well, so that's
please don't throw me into the briar patch.
So it's
I love your ideas. Now force me. Now make me do it.
But veto it, Brownback. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, what was being said by one of the state legislators was, there was concern that there would be regressive sales taxes. Of course, and our property taxes will go up, and the farmers are unhappy about that. They actually realize that without roads and with huge property taxes, all of a sudden that they will not survive, which maybe is part of the plan. Who knows? You know, to get car get, I don't know. But so one of the state legislators is saying in print, well, about the sales taxes on cigarettes, I used to smoke cigarettes, but then I decided to chew tobacco. So maybe some of the people could examine their choices.
Oh, please. Oh, God. I gotta share something with you, Diane. You just had a note in. You just had a note from Carol. She said, Diane, you continue to be marvelously coherent. I'll continue to talk like a well-educated sailor. So, you know, we've got the yin yang thing going on. And Carol went on and noted, I willed Diane to call tonight. I told Gerald in the chat room I needed to hear from Diane. And then when she called, he said I was a witch.
Well, listen, it's the Midwestern woman thing.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. You know, I have to
tell you. Is it the Hooterville Telegraph?
Well, I mean, she's in Missouri. I'm in Kansas. I mean, I have a real bias here. I've lived elsewhere. I've traveled all over the world and stayed in different places in the world for a while. And while I was doing that a lot, I kept thinking, people are real interesting. Men are about the same everywhere, but the Midwestern women, and I know it sounds self-congratulatory, but I swear to God, I was just like, where are the Midwestern women? Because they are so interesting. And Carol personifies that. I mean, they're resourceful. They don't take any shit, you know? So I think maybe I got the message because she's a Midwestern woman in the next state. Yay, Carol.
I
know it sounds really like a...
No, but it doesn't, because, see, I feel that way about hillbilly women.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh. You know, the men in West Virginia were blown to smithereens, burned up, gassed, tormented, and had a proclivity for working out their frustrations in beer joints and bars and pool rooms. And meanwhile, the long-suffering hillbilly women were at home raising the family, keeping the place hanging together, and being tough as nails. Look, I'll be the first to say it and the first to cherish and praise it. The beginnings of the anti-mountaintop removal movement were women. And a whole bunch of the heart and soul of the struggle is still women, because women are the ones who pay so very much of the price, horrible prices. Let me find a quote here, just because this has been much on my mind. I put this on my Facebook page the other day, and it's actually a quote from a fictional person. And from a fictional book, you know, obviously a fictional book. Let me see if I gotta find it. Here it is. It comes from a science fiction book, and you being a sci-fi fan, this might be one to sit down with. I've been prattling on about this for years now, ever since Reverbo turned me on to it. Richard K. Morgan is the author. It's a series. It's the Takeshi Kovacs series, Altered Carbon, Broken Angels, and Woken Furies. And there's reference to this revolutionary of the future. And there are references scattered, peppered throughout the books of her quotes. And I ran across this one and just went, well, damn. Check this out. In any agenda, political or otherwise, there is a cost to be borne. Always ask what it is and who will be paying. If you don't, the next thing you know, the person expected to bear the cost will be you, and you may not have what it takes to pay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get that tattooed.
I thought about that
when the bomb train exploded.
Oh, yeah. Who bears the cost? Wow.
Because see, the cost is not borne by the oil company or by the railroad company.
Yeah.
Because see, it's going to wind up being a wash for them, because they've got insurance to cover this shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And they've got a legion of CPAs who can make it all disappear on the tax forms.
I think most of all they've got politicians in their pocket.
And they've got politicians to make all of that happen, Diane.
That, That's what makes it allowable. That's what's so disgusting to me, this fascistic dynamic that blends business and government. I hate that more than I can tell
you. Well, that's because that's the essential definition of fascism.
I hate it because I know what organizations can do and provide for society. We all know. If they're properly directed and contained, but, you know, they have to have rules. They have to be bound by, well, I don't need to tell the Horn family this. We all know that. But for me, that's the most hateful aspect of it all because it's a Gordian knot, and I don't know who can, you know, tug on it and make it any better.
Well, this is why I love our conversations, Diane. It is a Gordian knot. And recall the story of the Gordian knot.
Well, who undid it? I can't.
Well, the Gordian knot was a great was a test that existed. It was a piece of rope, and it was just in this ungodly knot. And all the great minds of the ancient world had come to undo the Gordian knot, and nobody could.
Did some kid do it, or some?
No. That's Arthur with the stone, with the sword from the stone. But no, this is almost the same. Along comes Alexander the Great.
Oh, yeah, right.
And he walks up to the Gordian knot, and this is kind of like the Kobayashi. This is kind of like the Kobayashi Maru, okay? There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening.
Yeah, yay.
So Alexander, instead of trying to untie the knot, Alexander pulls out his sword and just chops it into a million tiny pieces and looks up and says, problem solved.
That's right.
And that's revolution, Diane.
That's right.
The only way you deal with a Gordian knot is to entirely destroy the knot.
Yep.
If you sit there and try to pick at the threads, it will defeat you. But if you tear it all to pieces, it's not a problem anymore. And so consequently, I mean, going back to this quote that I've shared a minute ago, you know, ask what the cost is and who will be paying. I mean, so my friends in northern Wisconsin are asking what the cost is, and they know who's going to be paying because it's them. And the First Nations people who are saying hell no to the Keystone XL pipeline and the tar sands in Canada, you know, it's their sovereign land. And they know what the cost is, and they know who's going to pay it, and they're saying hell no.
Yeah. And they've got that long memory you were talking about because they do pass it on. But in terms of who pays the cost, what's genius about how the lecture series people lined up Thomas Frank from the fall in October is that the following lecture in that series in November is the former state budget director who served under three governors, not Brownback, but Parkinson, Graves, and Sebelius, and was in the legislature for a while. So I think that was genius in terms of, you know, you're saying who bears the cost. Someone comes in, what's the matter with Kansas, and paints the picture, you know, and then the next thing we know, the next month, someone comes in and says, and here's who's going to bear the cost in terms of the budget and why. I mean, I think that's genius on part of that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, I voted for Franks, but I didn't know about the other guy. They have to have connections to get him. So, but that kind of fits with what you're saying, you know, be cognizant of who's going to bear the cost. I mean, he's going to come in and tell us in no uncertain terms because he knows what he's talking about. Talk about long history.
You don't just ask who pays the cost. You have to know what the cost is, and you have to, and I think to expand upon the quote, you have to ask what currency the cost will be paid in.
Mm-hmm.
Because here in Appalachia, the currency we pay in is flesh and blood.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same thing if the Ogallala Aquifer gets destroyed because pipelines explode.
God. Yeah. Yeah, this is just a matter of time, and I mean, what do you do when all the signals are there, the wake-up calls are there, and there's no response? I mean, it's one thing that there's no government response. The corporations actually could choose to do something other than what they're doing. They could at least choose to buttress the safety specification of those cars. That's my understanding. I mean, I'm not saying that would solve everything.
Well, if I understand Rachel Maddow correctly, they deal with this shale crude in, of all places, Texas, and they process it before it goes in the cars so it's less volatile.
Yeah, so they could, and, you know, I've watched some, I am with some executives on a daily basis sometimes, and I just did a series of podcast interviews with two notable global executives who have a different consciousness and have done different things. But they weren't in the extraction industry, and I just think that's obviously part of the rub. But even there, you have an example given by Rachel Maddow where they could choose to do something better, something different. So when both business and government just choose to put their heads in the sand, I'm speechless. Or it's more like a sailor, so, you know, God bless.
Well, and if the day ever comes when you just when you need a safe place to do that swearing, just know we're here.
A safe zone. you'll be the safe zone for that. Other than it's someone from the media department hears that, I don't know. No, I don't know. Well, listen, this has been a great conversation.
It has. We always. But before you go, we gotta have a report. Need a wild rice update.
Oh, you know what I'm doing? Just as you asked that, I'm seeing this huge possum lumber through the snow into my yard. Isn't that interesting? Just a little update on my backyard, as if everyone needs to know. Listen, what I did, I got the rice, and what I did recently is follow your advice, and I ordered a rice steamer because I didn't even know there was such a thing. So I just got on Amazon Prime and, you know, ordered the rice steamer. So now that I have that, and I got it just recently, I will cook the rice, which is really, it's not rice really, it's long grain, right? I mean, it is
long grain, but it's not a rice at all. It's a grass seed.
Right.
But, of course, rice is a grass seed.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I look forward to doing that. And I don't think what I really want is just to cook it rice right. I've never cooked rice before, but I think I can do it with this new steamer. To me, the kitchen is a place to, I don't know, I have TV in here and I have books and cats. I don't use the kitchen for much cooking, but I envision that I'll cook the rice correctly and I'll put butter all over it, and that's how I'll eat it. That's kind of what I have in mind.
I won't argue with you on that. Now, I got to tell you, a little while back, I had a note from Kelly, who...
In Wisconsin?
No, Kelly here in West Virginia.
Oh, uh-huh.
Who got her wild rice as a belated Christmas present from her... she got it for a belated Christmas present. So she, now get this. You'll weep, Diane. You will weep. This is the foodborne portion of the program. Kelly sent me a photograph because I've been advised in advance that she is, in fact, a gourmet cook. And I now have proof. Just listen to these words. I mean, this is like a romance. I mean, this is like a song. Caramelized sweet potato, butternut squash, kale, and fried wild rice in a maple Dijon vinaigrette.
Oh. You can't just fry it, right? You have to steam it and then fry it?
Yeah, it won't.
I mean, you can't just put that in a skillet and fry it.
No, at some point in time it's going to need some, because, you know, it's dried. It's going to need some water to absorb.
Okay, and so she does that, And then she fried it. Oh, my God. Sounds wonderful.
You should see the picture.
She sent pictures. And isn't Carol going to give us a report? I know she's been very busy and with her trips and the family matters, but isn't Carol going to cook hers and give us a report?
Yes, there will be.
Yeah. Well, unless I get real ambitious, I'm going to steam it and have butter and some salt. I think I'll do that with maybe a third of it, and then I'll get more ambitious.
Yeah, well, the way they told me, you know, onion and celery.
Onion and celery.
Right in the rice cooker with the rice.
Okay, and you said bacon too.
Well, yeah, I didn't know if you were into the bacon.
Oh yeah, I know. I have a crock pot full of right now it's full of beans and ham hocks and ham shanks.
Yes.
I went to Hy-Vee's. I always ask the butcher how to do things. And because of something you said on your show, I got this idea I should have ham and beans in the crock pot. Something you said.
There are worse things.
So I go to Hy-Vee's, and when I get this idea, I ask them, these young men who, you know, are butchers, they start saying, well, my mom in this little town in Kansas, or my grandma, and then I really start listening. Well, you know, she did this with them, and he came out from behind the counter, and he said, not ham hocks, I want you to look at ham shanks and try those. So that's what I have in the crock pot.
Very nice.
With onions and, yes, and bacon, actually, speaking of bacon.
I'm hanging on to a little bit of my Benton's bacon from Madisonville, Tennessee, in the foothills of the Smokies to use with my wild rice, and it's going to be insane.
Well, you know, Bob, I'm all excited about the rice, but I wanted to wait till I got the rice steamer, which just recently came, because of the way you describe it being thousands of years in an ancient method of growing and harvesting. It's something real special.
Well, you just had a note coming in from Carol. She said, tell Diane to Google the rice, the wild rice. Uh-huh. There are good resources out there about preparation. A little goes a long way, and you have to soak it, too.
Soak it, well, yeah, like I did these beans that are in the crock pot. And you in a note to me a while back instructed me to rinse them and then rinse them again. Because
right, that's what I was told, it has to be rinsed three times.
Yeah. Well, now, these are things I can do. And then, I mean, I don't want to sound like I cannot cook, but it's not something I...
Well, we cooked some with apples.
Oh,
it was yummy.
Apples?
Yeah, and folded those, and the leftovers, folded it into pancake batter.
Oh, yeah, I heard. Oh,
yeah.
You cooked apples with rice?
Yes.
Well, I can see that. I can see it, and I can almost taste it in pancake batter. I'm not sure I can taste it just on its own for some reason. The pancake batter kind of makes it crepey, right? Like.
Well, I mean, it's remember the word for it in Anishinaabemowin is manumen, and manumen translates as good berry.
Oh.
And so and so yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's got some chewiness, but when it's properly, you know, sort of rehydrated, it's got a, well, it is its own thing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
The rice is a little like a fruit.
Well, no, not really, but
it complements a fruit.
But it's got a chewiness that's not like rice.
Oh, I can't wait now. I've got the rice steamer, and I've got Carol's good instructions too, and you're reminding me, how are those folks in Wisconsin holding up with their trials?
They're not backing down one iota.
And they
said from the very outset there will be no mine. And not too long back, Gogebic Taconite, the company that's owned by the the bad hillbilly Chris Klein, who has a mansion over near Beckley. Oh my God, you should see this place. They announced that they were going to suspend activities because of market forces and market dynamics, and maybe wait till the spring to continue with bulk testing. They don't know what they're up against. They have no idea.
I worry about the first people, Bob, because I worry about them. I worry. I mean, Peltier is still in jail in Leavenworth, you know? You know what I mean? Louis Peltier.
Yeah. Yeah.
My reporter friend used to go into Leavenworth to interview him when he was allowed. And he would come out, the Topeka Capital Journal reporter, would come out so mad at how they would not attend to his Peltier's health needs. Furious. Talk about swearing like a sailor. But anyway, I worry about the first people. I worry about them taking a stand. I admire them for it, but I just worry about what our government might do. So I'll cross my fingers. But leave it to the first people to take a stand. You know, that we all should be taking, but I guess they're gonna, you know, you're taking a stand and they're going to take a stand. And aren't the Lakotas going to take a stand?
Oh, no, there's a whole boatload of hell no.
Bless them. Well, I wish them the best, because I think this government could come down like a hammer on them. And by the way, that person Klein with the mansion in Beckley, the minute you said that, I envisioned, I don't have any special foresight or, you know, at all, but the minute you said that, I had a vision that at someday soon, those mansions are going to have to be surrounded by security guards.
I'm sure this one already is.
Really?
Yeah.
But I
mean, get on, and I just told the same thing to Gerald in chat. Get on Google Earth.
Uh-huh.
And look at the intersection of U.S. 19 and I-77 near Beckley, and you will see this massive, massive mansion with a man-made lake in the front of it and a white picket fence going all the way around the property.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there may be security guards there now, but what I was...
No, I know, I know.
The thing that came in my mind was on another level. We'll have to
storming the castle kind of thing.
Well,
but bear in mind, you want to talk about rubbing people's nose in it. This guy doesn't even live there half the time. He's got another mansion in Florida and a yacht named Mine Games with a helipad on it.
Oh. About rubbing one's nose in it. You know, but on another note, and before I leave, I would like to compliment two members of the Horn family. Well, one is Carol for rubbing their nose in it, because I did go on that site, Hear Women Speak, because you announced it one night.
Yes.
And she was writing about the Charlie Hebdo situation in Paris, and I liked what Carol did, because in that article, she mocked them. She mocked them. And as a writer, I mean, given she's obviously a writer, I was thinking how smart that is, because there's no such thing as honor among them. I mean, it's sort of a medieval feudal concept that only survived in here a bit, and there's no more honor among people. And there's no high level of moral development among these people. So you can't appeal to shame, you know, you can't appeal to shame when people don't have a high level of moral development. That's what I think anyway. But you can mock them because they have a real soft, spongy, weak ego structure, and they can't take that.
Well, right, and of course you're pulling a point right out of Saul Alinsky. Rule five, and see, I didn't know it, but I knew it. It's one of those innate things. The right wing is forever saying,
Oh, no, they're mean. They made fun of us. They said something mean about us. Meh.
You know, because they're a bunch of whining babies.
But
rule five is ridicule is man's most potent weapon.
Oh, did Saul Alinsky say that? Well, I can see it because their ego development is just pathetic. And so I thought Carol did a real good job at that mocking tone throughout the article. And on another note, and this is not directly related, but it does have to do with the Horn family member. I did watch, you know, Jim in Louisiana, Stan?
Yes.
I did watch the video of his father addressing the American people on that news spot he was allowed to have.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Oh, my God. Jim in Louisiana, Stan, I can understand how proud you must be of your father. That was incredible. And if we were a high-functioning nation, everyone would know about that video. Do you recall how he was, not only did he look into the camera and just speak truth so, in such an articulate manner, do you recall how he came up from behind his desk and sat on the desk?
Yep.
That was, I mean, in terms of theater,
That's the mark of a natural.
Exactly. It was natural as it could be, and I was just glued to the screen watching that, and so proud that I know, you know, through the Horn family, his son, you know, remotely by your radio program. So I just wanted to compliment two members of the family in that respect. And I should let you go because I know you have other people who want to talk with you. And I congratulate you again on the Chris Hayes segment, although I'm really sorry about the reason for it.
Well, that I appreciate that on both fronts. And it's very kind of you, Diane. I will throw one more thing out there for everyone's consideration. I did another TV piece yesterday morning.
Oh.
If people will go to uprisingradio.org, and it's Uprising with Sonali Koftakar. Uprisingradio.org, how does the latest West Virginia train oil spill fit into a broader context of climate change and environmental pollution? The video is there.
Oh, and how long is... I mean, you had a much longer format for what you had to say there, I'm sure.
Well, the video is only 3 minutes and 52 seconds, but the audio only version is 15 minutes.
Good. Right. So you really had time to develop. I mean, I think you did an excellent job on Chris Hayes with the time allotted. I mean, really, what you were saying when on the screen was a big flame in the air. Is very impactful. But okay, Radio Rising, is that what you said?
Uprisingradio.org.
Okay, I'm going to write this down. Uprisingradio.org. Okay, good. I will look forward to doing that, Bob. And I'll say good night now and listen to the next conversation.
All right, wonderful. Good to hear from you, Diane. Do take care. And thank you for a wonderful, wide ranging, erudite, marvelously coherent conversation.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. And you keep warm, please.
I am so going to try.
So going to try. Okay, Bob, good night.
All right, bye now. The marvelously coherent Diane calling from Kansas, Stan. We have one line. The Skype line is occupied at the moment. The Gizmo line is free. And we're going to take just a quick break. I need to check in with Ferg on something, and then we'll get right back to it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Tonight is a Have a Show on Me via Barbie. And thank you to Bob in Texas for jumping in with a Have a Show on Me for tomorrow. Anybody want to do Have a Show on Me for this coming Moran Monday? That one's still wide open. Again, your calls in just a short minute, but I got to jump out of the studio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, the engine's gone dead, cried the men who were there. And she passed up the dock on the wide Delaware. Then the ship ran aground and the oil got away. And they did not report the big spill on that day. It was hundreds of thousands of gallons galore, stretching 32 miles down the Delaware shore. There were geese in the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crude. And it's oil, oil, drifting to the sea. Oil, oil, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket shores was a ship run aground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime as it poured out a slick, stretching into the tide. Over 100 miles, yes, it came deep, it came wide, and it's oil, oil, oh, pouring in the sea. Oil, oil, oh, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. There's talk of some writing found in the ship's log, saying one of the helmsman's unfit for his job. And the ship's gyro compass was 6 degrees shy. Their charts were outdated, but they tried to get by. And you know it's oil, you can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah. Now both of these ships, like a great many more, got registered in through Liberian doors. Inspections are quick and regulations of few. Just sign on the line and go find you a crew. Yes, one of these ships was the Olympic Games. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. Well, it's sad, but it's true. Things got worse for the seas. So I ain't even mentioned Amoco Cadiz. Amoco Cadiz. Between England and France, the big super tanker out there taking its chance. With his 100,000 black tons of the slime, Amoco Cadiz spilled the most of all kinds. Yes, you know it's oil, oil. Man, it's creeping in the sea. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Now down in the Gulf, east of Mexico way,
There's something gone wrong, so the papers all say. A Mexican oil well is leaking its goo. They say it's the worst that things have ever come to. Yes, it's gallons of sludge, 60 million and more. It's cruising and oozing towards many a shore. Yes, things have got bad, but they'll probably get worse. If you can't drink the oil, oh, you might die of thirst. Because it's oil. It's oil. And it's creeping in the sea. Oil. Oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah!
That's a classic. Not a lot of people know about it. What a dandy that is. Steve Forbert and the Oil song. Don't buy it at the station. You can get it now for free. Just go down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Because, you know, our oil industry loves us. I heard Malloy talking last night about that really, really earnest blonde lady with the black pantsuit who talks about how we're safely recovering natural gas and oil from shale. And I couldn't help but smile because, you know, Mike does that so well. But lo and behold, it was that one word, recovering. Not obtaining, not drilling, not fracking, not blasting, not poisoning our way to prosperity. No, hell no. We're recovering it. Because, see, the oil was lost until we... I was lost, but now am found. You know, whatever. It's being recovered. And see, when you're recovering, it's getting better, isn't it? Mr. Orwell, white courtesy phone. All right. Let's run back to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Actually, I'm just going to jump on and jump back off because I want to apologize. I showed you how a few times I get phone calls when I'm actually on the phone. I got a phone call, and I reached over to try to take care of it. I didn't know how to do it. I dropped both calls. So
you threw it. Okay. Happens all the time. Wrong button. Threw the wrong switch. No, that's the neighborhood where I live.
Well, I would have just declined the call, but it was a relative, and I figured, you know, when a relative
you take the call from the relations.
Yeah, and then it turned out you got your money tomorrow. No, bye.
I love you. Can I borrow you some money?
Yeah, win the lottery. Find out how many friends you got. Yeah, but I wanted to apologize to you.
Oh, you owed no apology. Yeah. It's just I figured my bandwidth had gone boogie or something.
No, for a minute I thought my phone had dropped the call because I'm on a cell phone. So I looked down and, oh, phone call, what the hell? Oh, shit, damn it. And I'm like, oh, frack, oh, well. And I figured I'd wait and let other people call. But anyway, let me jump off here so somebody else can get to a few minutes with you. And I'll maybe buzz you maybe later tomorrow or next week or something.
All right, sounds good, John. Drive careful.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And now on over to our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan, who got conjured. Hey, Jim.
What's up? What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
I want to thank Diane for the compliment on the web, on the video. Yeah, my father was a little bit of my interview.
Yeah. No, it is a cool piece of historic video footage.
Yeah, but when I take into consideration, I was done, I think, in mid-68, and it hasn't changed. It is hard. It hadn't changed at all, almost. You could play that again.
Yeah, really.
Just thought everything would be relevant in one way or the other. So, but the other reason I was calling, I don't know what's wrong with I'm having trouble. I'm going to mail that $50.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's okay, man.
I know, but it's a point of honor to me. So, but, or maybe I'll figure out what, because I can't
you can't get to headonradionetwork.com?
Well, I'm listening to you on, tune in. And I can't get to that. For some reason, the webpage, I was having trouble with my computer that I was fixed, but...
Are you going to headonradionetwork.com? There's a lot of people that go to headonradio.com, and that doesn't exist.
Okay. Let me write that down. That's probably it. Because that's the funny thing about computers. You leave out one freaking character, and it doesn't know what the hell you're talking about. Headonradionetwork.com?
Yeah.
So how do you like another Bush possibly being in the White House?
I'm waiting. I'm waiting with breath bated with cyanide.
You know,
no, I loved it when he announced his policy team, and it just turned out to be the same gang of war criminals. That's just the Bush family croquet society.
Well, it's not just Bush. It's whatever Democrat gets in, and then that was one of the things Obama did, was he said, well, I'm going to try and sing Kumbaya and get along, and he brought on some conservatives who were going to help.
Oh, yeah, he was trying to do that Abraham Lincoln team of rivals thing, and it doesn't work anymore. That's as out of fashion as high button greaves.
Yeah, well, especially now, especially with these neocons. I mean, like you were saying about what Malloy was talking about last night, he was just right on fire, and unfortunately, I think he's right. You know, I say unfortunately because, it affects my future for the next 20 or so revolutions around the sun if I last that long, which maybe I will. But, I mean, talking about it, I've been hearing it through other different sources about they're just going to kill Social Security, and it's just, and what's weird is I know older people, and it's like they got theirs, they don't care. You know, I got mine, I don't care. You know, they don't think about the other people behind them. I mean, do you run into that sometimes?
Well, yeah.
In fact, I remember being at a little family gathering about a year or so ago, and this was one of my cousins-in-laws, and he was talking about, yeah, they're going to have to do something about that Social Security. Now, he's like 79, 78, 79, he's saying that, and I'm thinking, you motherfucker, you got yours. You're happy that you got yours. Now you're ready to cut back on it. Now that you're about to, you know, hopefully trip off the mortal coil, since, you know, he probably has some sort of deal with some sort of sky spook, you know. I guess it's Space Ghost he's going to hang with.
You mean, want me to turn on the reverb? Hang on. Space Ghost!
But, it just kind of shocked me that he was just, because I think about my siblings and stuff like that and wonder how things are going to affect them. I just don't, and I wouldn't say, and I know that Social Security, they've been doing this for 20 or 30 years. They've been talking about it's going out, it's going broke, which, and then like Moore was saying, they've been trying to get rid of it since its inception when FDR started it.
Yeah, well, you know, hating Social Security is something that's been passed down from generation to generation among the Republican faithful. I mean, why else would FDR had to have, not FDR, why else would Eisenhower have had to write a letter saying that any political party that seeks the end of Social Security will cease to be a national party in a decade?
You know, the weird thing is now people, it seems like they've got their talking points so together, and a significant segment of the American public, for whatever reason, seem to buy into it. Because I see people who shouldn't be saying things like that, saying things like that.
But that has to do with abandoning the field. It's like what I was talking about at the beginning of the program in the filibuster, Jim. When people are presented with only one alternative, they tend to side with it. Like these here in West Virginia, these ads about, if we can only take away construction workers' paychecks, all our children will come home and build schools and buildings and hospitals. Oh, and it'll be a glorious day for godly Americans. And, you know, where's organized labor? Where's organized labor saturating the airwaves with that shit? Nowhere to be found. Because if you ask them, well, we ain't got no money. Pass the plate.
Yeah, there's what.
And then the people who do carry their water, and I'm not necessarily talking about me, let them go hungry. I mean, you know, labor? What? Pony up for? No. I mean, I've been down that road. I've had that conversation.
We'll be happy to provide you with guests. Would you care for a personalized emery board? Here's some candidate sunflower seed packages.
It just pisses me off and frustrates me no end, Jim, that our side does not get the idea of messaging.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that could cost. I mean, I don't know who the Republicans are going to have running. It looks like the Democrats are going to have Hillary. I don't know. I'm not too thrilled with that. I might have to go with the third, you know, although they ain't doing it. Third party candidate, go with the Green Party or whoever comes up. I don't know if Jesse, I'd like to see Jesse Ventura, but even if a third party candidate got in, unless they had a significant number of their own, like, party candidates get in, the president.
Right, and as I've noted before, Jim, FDR only got anything at all done because he had a humongous crisis on his hands, and he had Democratic majorities in both houses that he could wheedle into passing some actual meaningful legislation. And no sooner were the Democrats out of power than the Republicans started trying to tear it all down. Look at, you know, the classic example being Taft-Hartley. You know, you get the National Labor Relations Act that boosts union membership, and along comes Taft-Hartley a decade and a half later and guts it because the money was unhappy.
Yeah, and then it's like having the workers fight against each other, you know, basically. You know, basically lowballing each other. It's like, oh, well, he's making $15 an hour and I'm only making $8. Well, instead of thinking, why can't I get 15? It seems like a lot of, quote unquote, workers want to drag that person down instead of pull themselves up. It's a weird psychological makeup of, I guess, humanity. But maybe that's just what humanity is. I don't know. A human thought.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, I got to tell you, after our last conversation, Jim, I'm still a little bit crushed that the babies aren't baked into the king cakes. So, I mean, hell. I mean, that proves as much as anything that America's gone to the dogs.
Well, but yeah, that's a Garrison trait. We like to shatter illusions wherever they are. So
yeah.
I'm going to let you go, Bob. And,
all right, Jim, you have yourself a wonderful evening. At least I don't have to tell you to stay warm.
Well, actually, it's still kind of chilly. It's above freezing now, so we're doing a little bit better than I think when it gets freezing.
Yeah, we're holding steady at 1 here. This is one tough little degree. It's not going quietly.
All right. I'll disconnect,
Bob. All right, you take care, Jim. Bye now. Yeah, I guess what, in another hour or so we'll be at 2 below, but yeah. It has been an enjoyable evening, and I hope Thorn in the Side Thursday has been as good for you as it has for me. Again, if you want to listen to the interview with Sonali Koftakar,
uprisingradio.org, and you'll find a video snippet there, as well as you'll be able to listen to the entire segment. It was on Free Speech TV, and some of y'all even get that on your cable systems. Imagine that. And, of course, I had a lovely half-hour conversation with Nicole Sandler yesterday as well. You might want to catch her podcast. It's always fun talking. Nicole is a good conversationalist. I don't know. Maybe someday we should put together an extraordinary ordinary roundtable of starving progressive radio hosts, and just really get that going. Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. So, what time is it? Yeah, I can't really. I don't think there's time for another phone call, but that's okay. Oh, that's interesting. Ron noting, Bob, you're at exactly the same temperature as Ottawa. Welcome to my world. That said, it's going to get a lot colder overnight as another cold front moves in. I just looked at the extended forecast. I think March is going to come in like a lion. But the thing is, with climate change, you know, you used to be, you could count on that old mnemonic or whatever it is, that if March comes in like a lion, it'll go out like a lamb, and vice versa. Now, not so much. I've seen a few years now where March came in like a lion and went out like a lion. And the lamb part seems to pretty, I think the lamb has been shish kebabbed. What? Randy and PA trying to increase my stored house of knowledge. Take heart, Bob. Where you are, it's 255 degrees Kelvin. It was kind of interesting, though. I had to be out in it earlier today when it was like 5 below 0. And one thing that I did find interesting is that, frankly, that 5 degrees below zero with no wind blowing and about 70% humidity, honest to God, it didn't feel as cold as a sopping wet 33. Go figure. Gerald noting, that lamb, Bob, that lamb's been sacrificed for the corporate gods. Well, the climate's been sacrificed for the corporate gods. Oh, my God. News Ninja Carol Baker has found the posting over at News Gusters where they had a hissy about what I said to Chris Hayes. Doctor Who now giving instruction to Carol. Carol, you got to say it like Malloy when he speaks about Newsbusters' criticism of him. Lip talker says... Yeah, and you fill in the blanks. Doctor Who's noting, basically, lip talker tells truth, corporate whores don't like it. No disrespect to sex workers. Oh, God, the truth seekers are wonderful. All right, then. Thanks, everybody. Thanks in particular... for the Have a Show on Me from Barbie this evening, and for tomorrow from Bob in Texas. Thank you both very kindly. It is a huge help when we get a little out in front and manage to somehow stay a little bit out in front. Thank you so very much. It is time to get out of here. Thanks to all of you who share your precious and finite time, however it is that you do it, either screaming at the speaker or laying hands upon the subwoofer or calling in or emailing or tweeting or Facebooking, all of that. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And always, 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 Gina. Wait a minute. Well, anyway, Gina. It's all for you. I don't know where the music went. It is all for you. Y'all have a good evening. Bye now.